Hi, everybody. Welcome to Fireside Chat number 315. Mr. Tubbs is in his bed. We have no idea how long. Megan has already put him back six times. And at least you're getting a chance to take a look at him. He's still a puppy, so he's not as trainable or as relaxed as otherwise might be the case. So, of course, it's an opportunity. I'm Dennis Prager, and it's an opportunity to talk to you about what's on my mind and then take your questions. Okay, I told you, I knew. All right, look, you got a chance. All's good. Got to be grateful for what you have in life, Mr. Tubbs. Yeah. English bulldogs are a riot. There's no question about it. Well, I don't think I'm going to be long on this subject, even though I could speak about it for hours and probably should. But there is something I want to make clear about the Middle East, about Israel, the Palestinians, Hamas, etc. The subject of I believe the first video I ever did for PragerU was explaining the Middle East conflict, and it's... Middle East problem, that's what it's called. It has gone viral. There are probably tens of millions of views, which I'm very grateful for. And the theme was very simple. One side wants the other side dead. That people refuse to acknowledge that is a puzzle. It's a puzzle that I think I can unravel, but nevertheless, it doesn't speak well of anyone who follows the conflict at all and does not understand that that is the truth. One side wants the other side dead. The Palestinian side wants Israel destroyed. That's the conflict. Palestinians were offered a state five times, and they refused each of the times. See the PragerU video on that, given by David Brog. How he delineates the years and what happened. They don't want a state alongside a Jewish state. They want a state and no Jewish state. They say it, and people still delude themselves. That's what's so fascinating. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That means there's no Israel. From the river is the Jordan River to the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. Palestine will be free. There will be no Israel. That's what they're chanting. They don't deny it. Western individuals who deny that the Palestinians, not every Palestinian, but the position of the pro-Palestinian world is the destruction of Israel and ideally the murder of as many of its Jewish inhabitants as possible. People who don't see that are lying to themselves. They're willfully not hearing. It's not hidden. It's the Hamas charter. To destroy Israel is in the charter of the Hamas organization. What is the complexity here? Whenever I hear, oh, it's a complex issue, then I know people are obfuscating. They're making it complex. It isn't complex. Maybe solving it is complex, but the issue is not complex. One side wants the other side dead. And if October 7th didn't prove that, nothing will. All of it is, it's like a wall of simple untruths. Like, oh, look at how many Gazans have been killed. Did people say in World War II, look at how many Germans were killed? A lot more Germans than Brits or Allies. I've mentioned this to you in the past, but it's worth repeating because people forget these points. Do you actually measure morality in a war as which side has more civilians dead? That's the measure. Not which side is trying to destroy the other, which side started the war. That's irrelevant. Far more Japanese died than Americans died. Almost no American civilians died at all in World War II. So was America the wrong party? Or what I asked at Oxford, which is something you might want to watch. It's only about 8 minutes, when I debated this very issue, ironically, Hamas and Israel at Oxford University. It's on YouTube as well. And I asked, when in the history of the modern world has there been a conflict between a police state and a free state, and it was the free state that was the one that made the war? There's been no example of that. Wars are either between two police states or a police state and a free state. Two free states don't go to war. And whenever there is a free state and a police state at war, it's the police state that has made the war. I guess point number three, all Palestinians who are being killed in this war are the victims of the Palestinian groups themselves, just as the Germans who died were the victims of the Nazis, not of the Allies, and the Japanese who died were the victims of their government, not the Western Allies. That's it. That this stuff is not complex. At least you have to say this. At least the supporters from the Middle East, the supporters of the Palestinians, admit we want to destroy Israel. Western supporters are less honest than Middle East supporters. Oh, they don't want to destroy Israel. They just want their own state. In a lifetime of thinking about these issues, I have asked myself on numerous occasions, what's more dangerous, a person who lies and knows he's lying, or a person who lies and doesn't know he's lying? He's lying to himself. Lying to yourself is the more dangerous. There's no hope. They're lying to themselves, Western supporters of the Palestinians. Oh, we're just for peace. Well, they're not. The people you support are not just for peace. That's the point. Okay. Time for the video question of the day. Here we go.
What's up, Dennis? My name is Joseph Perez. I'm here in beautiful Los Angeles, California. As you know, the holidays are coming up, which means family dinners, which also means heated political discussions. So my question for you is, what do you do in that scenario when you're at dinner for Thanksgiving or Christmas, Hanukkah, and there's a huge political debate that sparks between your family members? Do you engage? Do you try to be the voice of reason? Or do you try to change the topic to something else? Let me know. Thank you.
I'm laughing because so many places, so many families have that issue. Okay, so here we go. I got a number of thoughts on this. Number one, not importance, just number one that comes to my mind. I'm torn. My inclination is in family life, I mean, obviously extended family included, just keep good relations and don't argue politics. That's my inclination. My wife is a very strong woman. Her inclination is bury them alive. My wife does not think that family members should be given a pass on stupid thinking. I don't know who's right. I really don't. That's why I admit to you, it's one of those rare times where I am just torn enough not to give some definitive answer. Maybe it's easier for me because I have a microphone. I have a megaphone. A big one. And I'm very blessed and very lucky. So I don't feel the same need, perhaps, as others to change family members' minds. By the way, my immediate family is all on board with my values, my wife and my children. I'm very lucky and blessed. So I'm talking about extended family. And so because of the nature of my life, I don't have the normal human urge to change minds in small groups, because I'm given the opportunity to do it in very, very large groups. It's like my brother, my older brother, said to me many years ago, I don't even know if he'd remember it, said, Dennis, I envy you. I get angry at what's happening, and I tell my wife. You get angry, and you tell millions of people. And he was right. It's true. I what am I going to say? I totally get it. So maybe because I sort of live that experience on such a large level, in the micro, I don't feel as deep a need as those who don't have that ability would feel in terms of the micro, the number of people that they get to talk to and offer their opinions. That might be a factor in my opinion, and might not be. It might simply be exactly what I said, leave family alone. Now, having said that, let me offer some exceptions. So my wife's thinking is especially with regard to a child. I know her really well. She would not patronize a child, and she would risk that, even if that's what it came to, she would risk the child's alienation rather than shut up. This, my dear child, is how I feel, how I stand. These are my opinions. If you differ, that's great. I'm not gonna stop talking to you. If you stop talking to me because we differ, that's on you. I'm paraphrasing what I think my wife would think, and she would be right, by the way, in that regard. I don't know any parent who stops talking to their child because of politics, but there are plenty of children who don't talk to their parents because of politics. And shame on them. And I believe that a good judging God will punish them. I really do believe that, incidentally, because you're violating one of the Ten Commandments, honor your father and mother. You stop talking to your parent unless there's a really, really, really good reason, like they have traumatized you with sexual abuse or something like that, then you can't do that. The commandment, honor your father and mother, doesn't come with an asterisk, only if you agree with them on politics. So her belief would be absolutely, in a rational way, you talk to your child and you go through an issue. Your child doesn't want to talk about it, fine. Your child doesn't want to talk to you about it, talk to you, period. No, it's sad, but she's not willing to forego what she believes for the sake of having a child talk to her. As regards other relatives, well, I don't know how many people are going to lose a lot of sleep over a third cousin not speaking to them anymore. It's really the most painful one is with regard to a child. A brother or sister or sibling is a painful issue too, potentially. So there's a case to be made in my thinking. Family is family. Don't rupture family. You don't have to argue. But there's a case to be made there. If you raise the subject, or if the subject is raised somehow, I am not going to stop telling you what I believe because you're family and I don't want to lose you. So I have no answer on that, but I have more thoughts on your question. So one of the things that would have me determine, even given my approach, it's family, don't bother to talk about the weather and, you know, childhood memories or whatever. But if there was someone at the table who I truly felt was persuadable, that would affect my attitude on this issue. See, I know when I'm talking to someone, if they can possibly be reached, because my whole methodology is based on reason. I have very unemotional arguments. And I have a sense often this person is not reachable. It's like talking to people on the left. I don't mean liberals, although some liberals may qualify, but real leftists is like talking to people who are religious. And I'm not knocking the religious. I'm just saying I don't try and I don't think it's possible to talk people out of their religious beliefs. If you truly believe men give birth, how am I going to talk you out of it? By telling you that men don't have uteruses? I mean, what rational argument? Since your argument is so utterly and totally irrational, it is so contrary to the obvious facts of life. What argument can I give? You really believe that it's fair for men who say they're women to compete in women's sports? Is it fair for men who don't say they're women to compete in women's sports? Well, if it's not fair for men who think they're men to compete with women in women's sports, then it's not fair for men who say they're women to compete in women's sports. Two big cycling awards just went to men who said they're women in women's cycling. Women were deprived of first place and second place. In a weightlifting competition in Canada recently, a man who said he was a woman lifted 250 pounds more than the first place woman. If you think that's fair, what argument could I possibly offer you? That's why I wouldn't argue. I only argue where I have a sense that the person might listen to reason. I mean, this is truly, it's a religious conviction that it's okay for men who say they're women to compete with women in women's sports. It is so contrary to morality, to reason, to fairness, to justice, to science, that what am I going to say at the Thanksgiving table that's going to change your mind? This is great turkey? What am I going to say? So that's another factor that's worth considering when contentious subjects arise. Third point, don't yell. I'm yelling, but I'm not at the table. Am I yelling? Is this considered yelling? Or is it impassioned?
That one.
Impassioned. Okay, that's fine. Any of you know my public persona? In general, when I have people I differ with, like on the phone on my talk radio show, I try to stay and usually am very, very calm. It's extremely effective. As hard as it is, and it is hard, because you know that someone who thinks that a man who says he's a woman can compete with women in women's sports is a fool. You know it. I mean, that's really, really a bad sign about a human being. There are many issues that I differ with people, but I don't say it's a bad sign about them. The size of government, okay? I can make a rational case and do that government should be as small as possible, because the more power in any institution, the more bad will come out of it. It's a rule of life. There is no exception. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Famous statement from Lord Acton, a British a thinker. So the fact that you differ with me doesn't make you a fool. But certain positions do. And so I don't argue with fools. I say loving things if they're relatives. Great to see you. How are the kids? How you doing? Any other stupid ideas? Oh, no, I don't say that. That's in my brain. I'm sorry. It doesn't come out. No, I'm engaging in some jest, but it is the truth. You have to make an assessment. Am I wasting my time? So all of these factors, family, closeness, what's sayable, also will it ruin the meal? I mean, that's another factor that has to be considered. In addition, is there anybody who's persuadable and all the other things I mentioned? I don't want to ruin the Thanksgiving meal. Why get together if we're going to yell at each other? So that's a factor on behalf of my position that you don't argue with family. Or if you do, at least not at the Thanksgiving or any other holiday table. How often are you getting together with family in those numbers outside of the major holidays? And many of you are listening or watching in other countries, obviously, whatever your national holiday would be, or holidays, when you get together with family, the exact same thing would apply. Who would want to get together the next year if one year it was just people yelling at each other? Even though I sympathize with one of the sides, it's possible to have a pleasant time. You're obviously skating on ice and not going beneath the surface. Okay, that's fine. You know, you're given family. You choose friends, but you're given family. You can get rid of friends, but it's not good if you get rid of family. It happens. But the ideal is to have some degree of warmth, whatever is possible. Have I covered it?
Mm-hmm.
Good. What's our timing?
We're about 22.
Oh, good. We have good time. Excellent. It's because it was a very brief monologue. Mm-hmm. That was as long as the monologue.
It was.
Yeah. Erica, 32, Chico, California, USA. Hi, Dennis. Hi, Mr. Tubbs. What's his hi, Mr. Tubbs? The guy doesn't even deserve a hi at this point. Hi, Snoopy, wherever you are. That's good. My husband and I are both Daily Wire members. We love listening to you and appreciate everything you're doing. We are a Christian family, but my children go to public school. I know you understand how that is a bit of a conflict at times. I am a stay-at-home mom of four. My youngest is 18 months, and my oldest daughter is in fifth grade. She mentioned Christopher Columbus the other day. I quote, "He was a bad man that killed innocent Native Americans and took their land." My mind was blown. I showed her an episode from PragerU Kids. We cleared the air on that one, and after watching, she completely changed her point of view. So thank you for that. Oftentimes, this is a long one, oftentimes I feel guilty because I have heard you talk so much about homeschooling and the benefits for our children. I know it's not for everyone, and I know some people like me are extremely intimidated by the idea. Homework is enough for me. Do you have any advice for a family like us with conservative views on ways to help our children best navigate these waters in public school? Do you think it's possible for them to not be ruined by the school system as long as we stay involved and connected? Any advice is greatly appreciated. God bless. P.S. I hope to meet you someday. I'm also really looking forward to reading all of the Rational Bible books. Thank you. Good. I hope you do. Well, the school system in the United States has really been degraded terribly. The percentage of students who are not doing math or reading at their level is enormous. And it's getting worse. Because one of the reasons is they don't teach normal things. They teach political things. If they have time, where do they find the time? I always wonder this. Aside from I don't agree that school kids should have drag queen story hours. Okay. By the way, I was opposed to sex education when it began. It is not the school's business to teach sex education. It's the parents' business. And somehow, did you know this? This is going to be revelatory. People knew how babies were made before sex ed. Yeah, that's a radical statement, but it's true. And the proof is, they made a lot of babies. So, encroaching on the parental arena is not the school's business. So if I was against sex ed in far more traditional times, imagine today when it also involves preferred pronouns and drag queens. But aside from the content, where do they find the time? Have the kids learned grammar and to speak English and to spell and to read and history, most important subject of all, arguably? Have they learned that? Of course not. Read the Civil War letters. Letters from soldiers fighting the American Civil War in the 1860s who never graduated elementary school. Their English is Shakespearean compared to most kids in their senior year in high school and in college today. I don't know what they're teaching them when they don't even have the time. I'm a very, very involved person in classical music, as many of you know. I periodically conduct orchestras. So I read about this a lot. They're given no music and art, two of the most precious things the human species has come up with. They learn nothing in music and art. There's no time with all the sex ed and all the global warming and climate change and all the trans and LGBTQIA+. It all takes up time. So if you can send your kid, Erica, if you can't homeschool your kid, and you probably can, but you feel you can't, it's not for me to intrude, you have to talk to your kids a lot about these values. Because the school will try to alienate them from what you believe is good and beautiful. Okay, Megan, 22, Austin, Texas. Hi, Mr. Prager. I'm 22 years old and I do not have many close friends. In fact, I probably only have one. There are a couple of people at work who I would really like to get to know, but I'm worried that once they, quote, find out that I'm a conservative, they will reject me or I'll get fired. Oh, God, is that sad. Fired. I'm surrounded by left-leaning people, and one of them is a BLM, Black Lives Matter activist. What should I do, and how should I approach them about my beliefs? I do not want to hide what I think, but I also do not want to get fired or forced out. Well, that's odd if you would get fired. You might be somewhat ostracized by your colleagues. That I do believe. When I was at Columbia University for graduate work, this is the early 1970s, a long time ago, I was completely alone. Being a religious person, in my case, a religious Jew, and conservative, although I thought of myself as a liberal. By the way, I still think of myself as a liberal, ironically. Conservatives are the protectors of liberal values, like free speech. Liberals aren't protecting it. Or the notion that you should be race blind. That was a liberal notion when I was a kid. Today it's called conservative. But I was alone at school, and I remember very, very strongly thinking one night, I was across the street from Columbia on Broadway in Manhattan, and I was thinking, I don't have one friend here. I had one. I have one friend here. But I wasn't complaining. I was just noting it. So what I did is I made friends outside of school. And also, how many do you need in order to not be lonely? I mean, the more the merrier, in my opinion. I am blessed with many. But how many really do you need? But that's a bad situation you're in. If you think you express yourself, you'll be hated by your colleagues at work. You may be right, by the way. You may truly be right. I don't know if you'll be fired, but it certainly doesn't make it a pleasant experience if your colleagues at work really dislike you. That we have come to such a point for much of American history, if you were a Republican or a Democrat, nobody really cared. You know, let's go to a ball game. That was the thinking. What's our timing?
We're at the end.
Yeah. It's a difficult time we're in. Really difficult. The difference between me and many, many people who share my values is that I am not as sad as they are, which is worthy of its own opening for a Prager fireside chat. Why am I not as sad and down as so many people seeing what's happening? Should I leave you in suspense?
Definitely.
You have now seen the first Fireside Chat trailer. With that, thanks for listening. Bye.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.